Conversations with Maria Menounos, podcast edition.
Is there anything she can't handle? She looks fear in the face day after day, but yet she never runs. She's unbreakable. She's a warrior. She's you. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. These things happen because you have to live your true self in a bigger way.
Featuring the best of Maria Menounos' SiriusXM show with celebrity and life-changing interviews, thoughts on the week, and more. And it's free. All we ask is that you rate, comment, and subscribe on iTunes, and tell a friend to subscribe to SiriusXM. Listen to Conversations with Maria Menounos on SiriusXM Stars 109 at 1 p.m. East. And now here's your host, Maria Menounos.
Happy Friday, everybody. It is March 2nd, 2018. My co-host today, the one, the only, Charlotte Flair! Woo!
That's so better than mine.
Thanks, Maria. Thanks for having me.
Best theme music ever. I got the quote of the day, guys. You don't learn from successes. You don't learn from awards. You don't learn from celebrity. You only learn from wounds and scars and mistakes and failures. And that's the truth, Miss Jane Fonda. I love that quote because, as you're going to hear on the show today, Conversations with Mariana, Maria Menounos, the podcast edition, because clearly it's hard to say your own name. you are going to hear our interview, Charlotte, where we start to talk a little bit about your book. We have so many other great interviews in the show this week. Again, we bring you guys this free, fresh source of news and inspiration and fun, plus the best interviews from our SiriusXM show of the week. So you can find us here every Friday. And we do this for free and we love it, but we do hope you'll help us out by subscribing, rating, or reviewing our show. And we hope that you'll love it enough on Fridays to join us on the weekdays on SiriusXM Stars Channel 109. So with that out of the way, you only learn from your wounds and scars and mistakes and failures. And you wrote your book, Second Nature.
Yes.
And you were really vulnerable in it.
Yes.
And I want to know, what were you so ashamed of? Like, what were those scars and those wounds that you have had to get past? And how did you get past them?
I think trying to uphold a certain image, knowing that, you know, my dad had been in the spotlight my whole life. And I wasn't really used to that environment. And then when I got to WWE in 2012, I was just thinking of my entire 20s, and I'd already been married twice and, you know, quit my volleyball scholarship and married a guy right out of college and then got remarried and going through a codependent relationship and it being unhealthy and living with that and not hearing the other girls talk about it and not having everything put together and not knowing what I wanted to do or where I wanted to be and just lost. And I think that's a lot when you get to WWE and everyone's like, you're Ric Flair's daughter and you must have it all together and you must have had everything and you just walked in the door. But I just had to pretend like it didn't faze me or bother me. But every day I just, you know, wanted to cry because I was still married to my first husband. And even thinking first husband, even when I say that now, I'm like, oh, are people judging me listening? And that's just a lot that I had to overcome because when I, you know, when I started writing this, I had already won the new WWE Women's Championship at WrestleMania 32. And I was the center of AT&T Stadium, which is unbelievable, unheard of. Mm-hmm. And Triple H and Roman Reigns and Undertaker and Shane McMahon were like the eye candy. But here I had this like secret that I came from this relationship that I was still dealing with and not talking about codependency and, you know, being scared of my own shadow, but I created this character that I wanted to be like in my own life. And that's how I made it through. And the better my career gets, the better my personal life gets. So I just spent 2 years journaling about it. And I worked with Brian closely, the author. And he was just like, no, you're not alone and neither are your readers. And that's what you need to let them know, and that your past doesn't define you. I just woke up one day and was like, okay, I'm going to wrestle. And it changed my life.
So unbelievable because, you know, everybody has their stuff, right? And it's always, I feel like, a whole other thing that we don't understand when you're someone famous's kid, right? Did I say that in the right tense.
Yes.
You know, there's like this whole other added pressure. And then you're walking into a business where, you know, he has such a legacy and you have so much to kind of prove. And there's just so many dynamics and emotions.
And I didn't really know about his legacy either. That's what's crazy is people are like, well, you know, your dad was Ric Flair. You must have grown up around the business. But my dad, I mean, yes, I went to my dad's matches, but I was always playing sports and I just wasn't really into, I don't know, the celebrity scene or anything like that. I mean, I grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina. I mean, now it's a little bit bigger, but I went to the same high school with the same people. So I just know. And it's when I started, that's when I started to learn like, wow, my dad means a lot to a lot of people in this industry. And I started to understand his choices. For instance, in 2008, I couldn't understand why he couldn't just walk away from the business. I'm like, Dad, you wrestled for 40 years. Why are you having this midlife crisis and getting married again and divorced again and married? And why are all of a sudden you wrestling now at TNA? I just didn't get it. But now being a part of the company, now I get it. Like the feel you get when you walk on stage in front of 101,000 people, there's nothing like it. And being able to control someone else's emotions or an arena full of emotions, now I understand. And then the road life becomes your family. And that's, you know, I'm on the road 260 days a year. Like that's
living out of a bag.
Living out of a bag. So now I get it. Cause I'm like, oh, I'm off for 10 hours. What do I do with myself?
Yeah, if there's an addiction, I'm sure, to that, like, that feeling. And I've had it a couple of times getting to go out there, and it's just like, it's an energy like nothing else.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And then I think, well, I wasted my 20s. Well, no, I don't want to say wasted. I've learned a lot, and I'm continuing to evolve and change and just be a better person. But I'm like, now I'm going to be 32 in April, and I want it all. I want to wrestle. I want a main event WrestleMania, but I also want to have a healthy relationship with somebody and have the opportunity to get married and know what it's like to be, you know, love someone for the right reasons and love yourself, but then also have kids and do all this and, you know, be the greatest of all time as a female. So
how
I'm just
do
like,
that?
I don't know. So every day I'm just like, what can I do? Go, 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 go. But just, I need to learn to enjoy the process, but it's just great. I always, you know, I look at where I was 5 years ago, and even in pictures, people wouldn't recognize me, but it's all about just having confidence in yourself and realizing that everyone makes mistakes and just learning that for some reason I feel guilty about things. Or the embarrassment is guilt, but it's no, there's nothing. We all have a story, and it's a matter of learning from it and then sharing your experiences to help someone else and just finding. Everyone always asks this question, well, who inspires you the most? I'm like, I don't really have someone famous, or it's just, I surround myself with really good men and women, and I take little parts of who they are. And I'm like, gosh, I wish I was more like that. Mm-hmm. Just never settling.
I love that. I just saw your tattoo. What does a little petunia mean? Oh, is that what it says? Petunia?
It's a little patience.
Patience. Oh, it looks like petunia
from
here. Guns
N' Roses song. Okay, someone said, why do you have a little princess tattoo? I was like, oh no. So my
Clearly
little
my
brother.
Clearly my eyesight isn't that great from far away.
No, no, no. It's a bad tattoo. It wasn't done well. But no, my little brother passed away almost 5 years ago. And his favorite song was Patience from Guns N' Roses. So I just always kept it with me. So when I look down and things, I'm just like, a little patience.
Yeah. Patience is key for everything.
Yes.
My priest before brain surgery was telling me, he's like, patience, patience, patience. And I've really realized that, you know, in every sector of our life, if we apply patience, everything
gets
better.
And you've been through everything. Look how positive you are and where you are.
Thanks.
It goes to show that it's what you go through makes you where you are, and it's how you handle in those situations.
Yeah. You have to just like, I always say life's happening for you, not to you. Tony Robbins taught me that. And so every time something, you know, that you would perceive as bad that's happening to you happens, you have to remember, okay, so if life is happening for me, not to me, this must be for my betterment somehow, some way, even though I can't see it right now and it looks really dark and dreary, but there's a reason. And if you really dig deep enough, you'll find that reason. And when you find that reason, it's almost like a game in life. You can unlock the next level for yourself, but you have to do the work to get there. And patience is such a big part of it.
Well, and then I was listening to you talk to someone earlier about that you took care of your parents too.
Oh, yeah.
That's just, It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's
You sounded proud of doing that when I heard you talking. Like, that's just when you hear people say little things, everyone has something that they're going through. So don't
I remember growing up, like you're saying, you're embarrassed. Like, my parents are janitors growing up, and we were always so embarrassed. People are like, oh, what do your parents do? And I'm like, so I would make up different things all the time because I was so embarrassed that they were janitors. And then when I came into this business, I was at that point, I was like, you know, Kevin was like, Marie, you need to be proud of where you came from and what your parents did, because they were immigrants and that's all they could do. And they did it well, and they provided a, you know, roof over your head and food. And I was like, yeah. And so I started saying it. My parents were embarrassed at first too. And I was like, guys, I'm like,
you're
proud
of them, and look at where you are today.
Yeah. And so I remember when we would clean those clubs, my dream was always to be able to take care of them. And so the fact that that all came together and I was able to is a gift for sure.
Ooh, that's going
to
make me tear up. Well, no, because sometimes you just, I mean, like, when I was helping my little brother and he was living with me off and on, I'm just like, yeah, my brother's living with me. And now I feel so guilty that I ever said that. But it is true, like, helping family, and, you know, it might seem difficult at the time, but there is a reason. And it's you only have one family.
It's hard. And it's hard. I'm sure that responsibility, like, weighed on you a lot.
It did. I mean, now I'm just so happy that I had that time with him, but, you know, before he passed. But, and I just think of it was such a learning experience, and, you know, what happens when I have kids and one or two kids, and, you know, what your siblings mean to you, and just that value.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys always get along growing up?
Yeah. He would have been 30 on Monday, and I'll be 32. So what are we, like, 22 months apart?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we were super close.
Yeah. See, and those are the scars and the wounds that you know, that make you tougher, and you have to move forward, right? It's like Rocky says, it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward, how much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning's done. And life isn't perfect. We all know that.
And it's just, he knew what he wanted to, like, I talked about this in Second Nature. I just didn't have a dream, or I don't know. I just wasn't motivated. You know what it boiled down to? I didn't have confidence, and I didn't believe in myself. I was just kind of going through the motions, especially after I quit volleyball for a boy in college. And my brother always knew he wanted to be a professional wrestler, and idolized my dad and idolized Dusty Rhodes and recited the lines and traveled to Japan and all over the world for this dream.
Mm-hmm.
Just wrestling in arenas for $15, like $50 probably, or free sometimes.
Yeah.
So then when I started wrestling and now I'm living his dream, I wish I could just tell him that I'm brave like him now, because to have a dream and follow it and get to that and continue and not see, like, light at the end of the tunnel. And that's, like, for a lot of the women that I work with who grew up wanting to be professional wrestlers. You're, you know, familiar with the Four Horsewomen.
I just
look at those three women, Becky Lynch, Bayley, and Sasha Banks, and that they, you know, wanted to be a wrestler, and here they are living their dream. Mm-hmm. And I just feel fortunate that I get to share that dream with them, because this wasn't something that I knew I ever wanted to do.
But you were meant to be there. And you are, and you are an excellent representation of the women's evolution. And so I'm so happy that you got to be on the show today. We're going to hear more from Charlotte in a little bit. Thank you for joining us again on Conversations with Maria Menounos, the podcast edition. We're here every Friday. We hope you are too. And we'll be right back.
I've always loved going one-on-one with people.
Welcome back to Conversations with Maria Menounos.
She's the SmackDown Women's Champion and, of course, wrestling royalty. She's the one and only Charlotte Flair.
Woo!
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 Woo! Woo! Woo! Woo! There's nothing more fun than wooing. By the way, ever since, I mean, Twitter has been around, I've always wooed at sporting events.
Yes.
So when I'm like, the Celtics are winning, I'm like, woo!
When I was in high school and they would woo, I was like, is this ever going to end? And then when I started wrestling, I was like, oh no, I hope they woo. So
yeah. Like, wait, so you would be in high school and, like, people in high school would woo
when you
came by? That's
how they would taunt me. I remember.
Wait, taunt you in a good way or a bad way?
No, in a bad way. The other teams. So when I'd be serving in volleyball at big games, the fans or the high school students from the other side would just woo the whole time and try to distract me. Sometimes it worked. Or they'd have like the cowbells and wooing.
Oh my God. Wait, so they actually trained you to really be able to be laser focused
at that? Just to zone it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It got worse in college too.
Really?
Yeah. But now
what did you play in college?
Appalachian State volleyball.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you're so tall. You would imagine that you would probably
I was actually really small for D1, but I mean, I guess tall and, you know, every day.
That's so fun. I love volleyball.
Me too, yeah.
That's so fun. You never played basketball?
I played in high school, but I think because my dad made me go to so many camps, I kind of started not to like it.
Mm-hmm.
But I wish I would have played more now. I'm like, oh, all the things I should have done when I was younger.
And you never wrestled?
Never wrestled.
Because I remember watching your dad's documentary. And oh, which actually I just
you did such a great job in 30 for 30.
I just remembered I did it too.
Yeah.
I remember when they asked me to do that. I was like, sure, I would love to. And I remember you saying that that was never something that you were really interested in doing.
No. And I remember watching you. Is it 2012 that you were in the match with Beth? Yeah. I was there for the Four Horsemen Hall of Fame induction. And that was actually when John Laurinaitis at the time, we were at dinner and he was talking to my little brother about wrestling. He was like, why aren't you doing this? And I know it was just to appease my dad, you know, just to like, because my dad's always like, yeah, she'd be so great. But then Reed looked at me and was like, hey, you want to do this? And I was like, I guess. And then 3 months later, I showed up in Tampa and the rest is history. But it was at the time, I still wasn't sure. It was just, you know, wanting to start over and needed a change.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, yeah, it's crazy.
So wild.
5 years later.
And so let's talk about the road to Mania, because you are going to be wrestling at WrestleMania 34 in New Orleans. Do we know who you're wrestling yet?
I know who I want to wrestle.
Okay.
I want to wrestle Asuka.
Okay.
I want to break her streak.
Royal Rumble winner.
Yes. The first ever women's Royal Rumble and the winner. We've never faced each other, never been in a multi-woman match. I feel her coming from Japan and having her own legacy and coming from a completely different culture. And then my background, I think it's definitely a WrestleMania moment. Mm-hmm. So that's who I would like to face.
See, now I would have thought you would say Ronda Rousey, because Ronda Rousey just recently signed.
She has to pay her dues first to face me.
Oh, shade. I love it. You know, we were talking about this a little bit in my kitchen today. You know, she obviously is a superstar in UFC. She's coming over to WWE.
Yes.
There were rumblings that people weren't happy that she was there. Are people excited to have her there?
Oh, they should be. Ronda's a star and an attraction. And with her coming to be a part of the women's division, obviously it brings more eyes on the women's division and not just our audience. Mm-hmm. I mean, people that don't even watch wrestling, they know who Ronda Rousey is. So they're like, oh, she's on WWE. Oh, let's tune in for a second.
Yeah.
So I think that's huge. But, you know, we're on the road 265 days a year and you just can't call yourself a WWE superstar. So the easiest thing she'll do is sign a contract. Mm-hmm. Whether she's willing to put in that work, you know, that's where the respect and understanding our culture and, you know, what it means to be a star in our industry. So, we'll see how the future plays out.
So now, does someone like you take her under your wing and say, like, this is how it's done?
100%.
Yeah.
I haven't had that opportunity. I'm on SmackDown right now and she's been on Raw, but I hope in the future. And especially for me, even though my dad was a wrestler, I didn't grow up in the industry wanting to be a wrestler, watching it, knowing much about it. But then the 5 years, I've learned so much. And now I'm like, well, I understand. And with someone like her, I feel like I was an outsider as well because I didn't work the independence. I didn't, you know, train anywhere else. I came in also as a college athlete and just picked this up. And I think that I would want to take her under my wing and show, you know, it's harder if you don't have the background or have traveled all over the world learning, you know, Japanese style, Mexican style, you know, being in NXT. So 100%. But I think all the women would be willing to take her under their wing and show her the ropes.
I feel like that was the coolest thing when I came in and did my stint. 4-0, guys. Just always have to make sure everyone knows. everyone wrapped their arms around me and really helped me, you know, be able to shine. And I think that, you know, with the women's division just really just exploding, it's really cool to see that the women are inclusive.
Sticking together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's important.
Because I think that's what's so different today than it was, you know, a few years ago, is that it takes two. It's just not one person. And if you can elevate your opponent, you're elevating yourself as well. Mm-hmm. And it, at the end of the day, it's a performance. Everyone's there for a role. And it's knowing your role, playing your role, and not just going into business for yourself. And that's why the division is doing so well, because mm-hmm. we all collectively are working together. And in our industry, it goes, you know, 1 minute you're here, 1 minute you're there. And it's ever evolving. It'll come back around. And having Rhonda, you know, have the opportunity to work with her and her, you know, stardom. And, you know, she did open the doors for us, I think, at WWE with her main eventing UFC, and then WWE picking it up, like, okay, maybe, you know, the women can main event. So now it's not a men or women's match. It's just a great match.
I never thought about that, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now, what is your best advice? Like, what will you say to her? Because, you know, even though she's a UFC fighter, it's a whole other art to wrestle. Because this is what I always say about wrestlers, and why, you know, I think that you guys are so dynamic. It's like, not only do you have to be athletic and, you know, obviously, you know, really know the skills of wrestling, but you're a performer. You have to memorize monologues. You've got to keep a 30,000 people crowd engaged. Like, there's so much to it. So from your mouth,
explain. You're getting me excited hearing you say that. Yeah. So I'll go back to Dusty Rhodes, who I know you know, because I was looking at the picture of you two in the kitchen. Hot times. I love my divas. So saying that, it doesn't matter how athletic you are. Yes, that's a perk. Like, for me, my whole character, genetically superior. But when you think of the greats like Dusty Rhodes, it's not because he was acrobatic or had the best body. It's because of how he made you feel. So it's about being a performer and eliciting a reaction from the crowd. Because when you walk out from 30,000 to 101,000 people, like at Dallas at AT&T Stadium, you remember that care, that superstar, from how they made you feel, whether a good guy or a bad guy. So it's, you know, bringing your UFC background, but figuring out who you are inside and having that extension of who you are become a character, so the fans can connect with you. Because the best superstars are the ones that can have an emotional connection, whether positive or negative, with their audience.
Yeah.
And that's what makes the greats great, like Dusty Rhodes.
You either want to get wooed or booed.
Yeah, exactly.
One or the other. So we were talking about the intricacies of, you know, really being good at this and the stuff that she's going to have to learn. Like, how much of that can you tell me on air?
Just reps, repetition, mm-hmm. being in front of the live audience. So she already has, I think, one of the hardest parts, and that's a presence. Not everyone, I think, has a presence or the it factor when they walk through the curtain, you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
She's a star.
Or that's like when Brock Lesnar comes out, you're like, holy shit. I'm bracing myself and holding my own hands every time he comes out.
He's a beast.
Yeah, but I feel like she's had that presence in the UFC where you're like, oh my God, she's a mean machine.
So it's a matter of staying the mean machine when the bell rings.
Yeah.
And that's what she'll have to learn. But again, I mean, she wasn't, you know, main eventing UFC or, you know, the toughest woman on the planet for no reason. Like, she has a reason. So it's a matter of all that dedication and determination and what's the word I'm looking for? To get to where she was, she'll have to do the same and put in the time mm-hmm. to be where she wants to be. But it's just a matter of her not losing who she is when the bell rings.
Yeah.
And people tend to overthink things. And that's, she'll learn the move, she'll learn all that, but it's, how can I be Rhonda to the audience when the bell rings?
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah. And also, you have to kind of go with the crowd too.
Yes.
If you're not impressing them, you got to take it up a notch. Like, you right?
No, but that's the best part of what we do, is knowing, is, you know, we're performing, we're hitting each other. It's like so many different things going on at once, and thinking of, you know, the times, and there's so much that goes to it, but knowing that you're controlling 30,000 people's emotions.
I mean,
like, and you just take them on a roller coaster. Like, I can make these people boo me right now. Oh, I can make these people cheer me. And that's where you get that
power.
Overwhelming power that you never want to lose. It's like all these people standing up because I'm doing this.
So cool.
And it's learning that you can do that and slowing down.
Yeah. It's just unbelievable.
It's crazy.
So one of the other things I want to know about is the acrobatics that you do. If you weren't a gymnastics like girl, like from a young age, like how the hell do you learn in just a matter of a few years how to do all these acrobatic things, like these huge flips off the top rope onto your opponent? Like, I watch you and I'm in awe.
It's second nature.
Oh! I'm just kidding. The name of her book, guys, available wherever books are sold. It's very raw.
Yes. I always say this, if you're scared of something, don't do it, because you're risking your other opponents. Like, your opponent's life is in your hands too. So you just have to commit to something. If you want to try this or that, you just have to go for it. And everyone's style is different because I had a gymnastics background. I, you know, flip and do things at the right moment.
So you did have that
background. I did, yes.
Okay, thank God.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
it makes sense.
But I also think, like, I'm 5'10". Do I really need to be the flippy girl? I'm not 5 feet tall, but it's fun once in a while to throw in a moonsault here and there.
I mean, it's so crazy. I also want to ask you, you know, your book, how did that affect you behind the scenes? Because you were very open and very honest in it.
Yeah, so it took me 2 years to write, and at first I didn't even know if I wanted to write a book with my dad, because I'm like, I've only been wrestling for a year on the main roster. Why am I writing a book? But they thought it would be cool to see my dad's career come to WWE in a different way, and they never thought it would be as a manager, so then to add me. But I worked really closely with the author, Brian, and he's like, you have a story to tell. And I was like, I don't know if I'm ready to tell this story, because I didn't even want to be a part of Total Divas, because I'm just such a private person, and I've seen my family go up the up and down, the ups and downs. But when my dad did the 30 for 30, and while he was working on that, I was journaling for 2 years for the book. And the one thing my dad taught me is, don't be ashamed of your past, and your past doesn't define you. So as I was going through the book, I was like, wow, I'm not alone. And it was very therapeutic, and I got it out there. And I felt for so long, I carried around so much guilt and shame and embarrassment, but I needed to write that book, if not to let others know that they're not alone, but for myself. Like, I was like, it's okay that you've, you know, been through these things and made it out. And it's okay that you didn't want to wrestle your whole life, and now you're here. And, you know, losing my brother impacted my life in ways that, you know, I can't explain.
I'm sure. And I know even your dad's health scare changed you, and you're, you know, like figuring out how to slow down a little bit, even though you're in such a fast paced business.
Yeah. And it's not even, it's not taking the days off, but it's just learning to enjoy the ride. Mm-hmm. It's a, you know, it's not a sprint. And a thing in our business is you have to wake up every morning and know who you are. Mm-hmm. And just seeing my dad sick and then overcoming it and changing and continuing to evolve. Like, he's like, hey, honey, I'm on an offset video. And I'm like, why are you so cool at 69? Like, yeah.
Because he's Ric Flair.
He has so much swag. And he doesn't even know it either. He doesn't even know what that word means, probably.
I love your dad. Every time I see him, we have so much fun. Guys, on Sunday, March 11th in Columbus, Ohio, you can check out Charlotte on the WWE Next pay-per-view event. It's called Fastlane. Charlotte has a match against Ruby Riott. She'll be defending our SmackDown Women's Championship. You guys can get tickets at Ticketmaster.com and watch it live on the WWE Network. Of course, WrestleMania is April 8th. I will be there. I'm hosting the Hall of Fame red carpet, as always. I told them I'm going to be 99 doing it. they're like, are you in? I'm like, yeah, you guys are stuck with me for the rest of my life. I'm going to be 99 hosting this because I love it. And that will be at 7 p.m. on the WWE Network. Also, you guys are going to hear from Therapist to the Stars, Marissa Peer. She's going to share how to overcome early childhood programming and realize you are enough. We'll be right back.
I've always loved going one-on-one with people.
Welcome back to Conversations with Maria Menounos.
My next guest is an internationally known therapist, speaker, best-selling author, columnist, and advisor to the stars. Today, she's going to teach us about so many things, rapid transformational therapy, pain and pleasure, so many things, how it could all help our lives. Please welcome Marissa Peer. Woo! Thanks
Thank
for being
you.
Here.
Thank you.
So there's so many things I want to cover with you, and I feel like we're probably going to need to have you on multiple times, and so I'm glad you're a California resident. At first I was like, wait, does she live in London? Because this is not going to work. I'm going to need more time with her. I've watched your TED Talks, and I just am a big fan. And so I want you to talk to everybody that's listening right now about how we can program our brains.
Okay, and that's a great question because people don't understand that the mind is set up to do whatever you tell it to do. You know, we're only wired to do two things in our whole life, which is avoid rejection and find connection. And that really affects us. And so when we start to say things like nobody likes me or I'm going to get dumped, you kind of make that happen. And the fastest way to get what you want from life is to talk to your mind like it's a smart 10-year-old kid and say, this is what I want today. Even I need to go to sleep right now and wake up after 8 hours feeling amazing. I need to give that presentation and be really confident and make eye contact. Because if you give your mind clear instructions, it will follow them to the letter. But if you go, oh, I know I'm going to mess that up and I'm not going to get enough sleep. And look, it's 3 a.m. and I'm still awake and now I'm going to have a terrible day tomorrow. I'm going to break out because I didn't get enough sleep. You got to really stop giving yourself bad suggestions. It's simple to understand. Your mind does whatever you tell it. So you might as well tell it amazing stuff. Mm-hmm.
Does the mind, oh, sorry, Jenny, do you have to believe it and like say it? Like, I feel like some people out there are probably like, well, I say I want all this stuff and it doesn't happen. But I feel like because I'm someone who manifests all of these things, the good and the bad, but mainly the good, I feel like.
Right.
And my husband will always be like, oh, you and your fruity put it out to the universe shit. And he won't buy into it. And I'm like, no, honey, you keep saying these negative things and these negative things keep coming true. Whatever it is you're saying, I said, so stop. Just try it. Just stop saying
just
it.
Just do it.
And so I want to understand, is just saying it enough or do you have to really believe it as well as much as you can? Because obviously – you know, you have to.
And it's when you believe it up front, of course, you're way ahead because you're saying it and believing it. But even when you don't believe it, like, you know, I'm always telling people to say that I'm enough. And people write in and go, you know, I said it for 2 weeks thinking it was crazy. And all of a sudden I've realized it's gone in. It's like lotion on dry skin. It goes in, it penetrates, it makes a difference. So I know people go, oh, I'm going to dismiss all that woo-woo Pollyanna stuff.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. But anyone with a 2-year-old child will tell you that when you say to them, mommy's going to kiss that better, mommy's going to rub the pain away, they believe anything you tell them because they haven't yet learned to doubt. So go back to being that kid who just believes everything. And it doesn't matter. You see, your mind doesn't care if what you tell it is true or false, right or wrong, good or bad, healthy or unhealthy. It lets it in. So you might as well tell it amazing stuff because it will let it in. That's its job.
Question then about so many people that I think are walking around suffering low-level depression or, you know, and we were talking a little about this. But so does that then play into what you're talking about? Do you think that that is how depression starts?
I think people have now got this very weird belief that depression is genetic and depression is incurable and depression is something that you're born with and you can't get over. But you never really see depressed babies. You don't see depressed 2-year-olds. I mean, they're depressed children are getting younger, but we learn what we live. And if you're born into a depressed family, you'll pick that up in the same way. If you're born into a family where the mother complains every month that her period is excruciating, even adopted daughters tend to have the same periods as their mother. Mother goes out to play tennis and goes, oh, I don't even notice it. That's what they turn into. The mother goes, oh, it's agony. It's killing me. Then they expect that. So we have expectations and they are always realized. And it's a really bad thing that we now expect to get depressed and anxious and stressed. And that doesn't have to be the case at all.
So does your environment really dictate? I mean, what do you do if you live in a family that is depressed?
Well, get out if you can. Or just, you know, I had a depressed hypochondriac mother. You know, in England in the war, they evacuated children. They took them away from their parents in cities, sent them to the country, but with complete strangers. And my mother never recovered from that and learned that if she was ill, she got a lot of attention. And she didn't want to give that up. So I just had to realize that that's her life. It's not mine. In fact, it was very good for me in a way, because you either do the same or the polar opposite, and I just don't do illness. I just don't do all that negativity. She was a great teacher for me to, like, okay.
What not to be.
What not to be. Yeah. So even if you, like, my husband's a bit like yours. He laughs at me because I can tune into lost things until he's lost his keys or his passport, and he goes, babe, can you ask your mind where they are? Why don't you ask your mind? Because like, no, because you're better at it.
No, Kevin don't tells me that I've made, he's like, you must have done something amazing in a former life because all these good things just happen. Like,
yeah.
If I want something, all of a sudden, some deal will come together where it's there. And I'm just like, I'm like, no, I don't think that's the case, honey. Like, I think from a young age, I dreamed big. I believed. I mean, I used to tell my teachers in school when I'd sign my test, I'm like, make sure you save that because I'm going to be famous someday.
It's so funny. But there you go. You were saying it from then. But see, I think, as we know, men and women are very different, but men are more skeptical. Let's be honest. Wouldn't you say? For the most part. Because my husband the same way. But then they love what we're saying, but they don't just want to jump on the train. They have to assess it. They have to take it back to their man cave. They have to think about it. They have to analyze it, you know?
Some, but then if you look at personal development, people like Tony Robbins and Deepak Chopra and Wayne Dyer, some of the best people out there with a message are actually men.
That's true.
But that's just because they get listened to more.
Yeah.
And women will overtake that.
I also loved in your TED Talk when you talked about Muhammad Ali, before he was anything, was like, I'm the greatest of all time. Yeah. And, you know, it wasn't that he just said it. He did the work to, you know, back it up. I think of Tom Brady. Tom Brady, when he was drafted, he was, what, like 17th pick or whatever. Mm-hmm. He told the Patriots owner, Robert Kraft, this is the best decision of your life.
Yeah.
And, of course, I mean, I get the chills. It was. But he wasn't the fastest runner. He wasn't the greatest quarterback. Like, he was mostly mediocre across the board. But I swear, there's something inside of you that just knows whether you're there or not. And I've always said that, like, J-Lo, way before she was J-Lo, knew.
Yeah.
When she was a fly girl, she knew. Nobody else believed it, but she knew it.
And when you're dating someone, if you can have that belief, you know, you're so lucky you're with me, you'll never find anyone else like me. I'm the best thing that's ever happened. You have to believe it. There's no point in saying it and thinking, oh God, I hope they don't find out I'm making all this up. But in relationships, what you believe about you will affect what the person you're dating believes about you. And it kind of breaks my heart when you see these kids running after someone who doesn't like them, doesn't want them, and they try so hard to make them like them. I look, forget about making that stupid guy or uninterested girl like you. Why don't you fall in love with you? Because if you can fall in love with you, everyone else will fall in love with you.
Yeah.
And you just have to do it.
That's
you just have to wake up and go, I'm amazing, I'm wonderful, I'm fabulous. And people go, but it's not true. It's like the mind doesn't know that.
Yeah.
Your mind has no capacity to reason. It believes whatever you tell it. It's like a sponge. So you have a choice every day. Tell yourself terrible things. Tell yourself great things. The thing you don't have a choice about is what you do to yourself. When you go, I'm a loser. I'm an idiot. I'm no good. I got cellulite. So although you can choose to be negative or positive, if you knew the effect negativity had on your body, you turn around and be positive really fast.
And I mean, that's just a bigger conversation in our world now because the negative is so much what is focused on, and it's time to change that, as we know.
I know.
And like you said, even if it's putting on the lotion and just telling yourself, I'm going to keep putting it on, I'm going to keep putting on, eventually it's going to soak in.
Sure, of course.
Well, I worked with this spiritual therapist. I've been working with her the last couple months, and you know, she made me do this exercise where every night I wrote in a diary and I had to say it in the mirror multiple times a day. It's like, you know, I forgive myself for judging myself as guilty and responsible for others. And I know in my new awareness that I am deserving of making self-loving and self-honoring and self-nurturing choices for my own health and happiness. And I was saying that every day, and there was another one as well. And it was like to reprogram the wiring, and it freaking worked.
It's amazing.
And I almost didn't even realize it worked until it had already worked so much that, like, I felt like a lot of responsibility just shifted off of me naturally. And I would always just worry about everyone. And I'd worry, like, 3,000 miles away if my parents were getting along or if, you know, my brother was driving them crazy or whatever it was. And then I would get in to fix it because I'm a fixer. And now I'm just like, no.
Yeah.
And guess what? Everyone's doing probably better than I'm not meddling.
Yeah.
So part of it was my fault too for even intervening.
But how amazing that you can get to that place and that you're being that self-aware.
Well, you need people like Marissa to get
actually,
you there.
That's right.
all you need to do is to write all over your mirrors, I'm enough. Write it in eyeliner, write it in lipstick, write it on your hand, put it on your cushions. One of my clients said that she's now had it printed on her children's pillowcases. It's the last thing they see before they go to sleep, and they wake up and see it. And recently somebody wrote to me and said, you know, my kid has been so bullied, and I got him to listen to your TED talk all about I'm enough. And when he went back to school after summer break, the bullies kind of surrounded him and said, write in your book, you're an idiot. And he went, no, I'm going to write something else. And he wrote, I'm enough. He said, you can write you're an idiot, but I'm enough. So I'm not going to do that.
Oh, I love that.
And a lot of schools are coming back to me now saying, you know, we're putting this I'm enough into the schools. Yep. And it's making such a difference. We're not getting these kids excluding the new kid or excluding the kid that's got glasses or freckles
or not as cool jeans,
not the cool jeans. Yeah, because you're not what you wear, you're not your labels, you're not your age, you're not your weight, you're not your shape, you're not your size. You're enough just the way you are. But it's very easy to think, but I am my size, I am my weight, and the years are my birth certificate. You're not. Those things are just the wrapping, and they really don't matter. And the more you know you're enough, the less they matter.
It's and so knowing important. You're enough, I think, you know, when you do stand up to a quote-unquote bully, nine times out of ten, they will scurry once you stand and say, I'm enough.
And, you know, knowing you're enough, it's like, you know, I work in television, and it's like, I'm going to ask for what I think I'm worth. And people think, oh, I don't want to ask for that in case they say no. But people don't say no. They just say, let's negotiate. And so many people can't ask for what they want. They can't even return food in a shop. And I with a lot of obese people
who
say,
that one I wouldn't really necessarily advocate for because of the people that spit on food behind the scenes. But
but they can't say, you know, that you have to, well, you have to do it with grace. You know, if you do it very nicely, but if you do have to be careful. But I work with a lot of overweight people. And their big problem is they can do it at home, but when they go out, they can't say, oh, I don't want to eat pizza. I don't really want to go out for burger and fries or donuts, because they don't feel good enough to say, I just want to have salad, or I just want to have fruit. Or they go to someone's house and they big macaroni and cheese, and they can't say, do you know, I really am really trying to get to grips with becoming my perfect weight and shape and size. J-Lo would never say, oh, you've only got donuts, I'll eat them. She'll go, I need you to send out for some fruit because I don't eat donuts. When you have that sense of self, it's not arrogance. It's ability to say, that's not for me. I deserve better. And it doesn't faze people. They actually like it because we like people who are confident. Confidence is so sexy. It's also incredibly reassuring. I mean, you want a confident pilot and a confident surgeon. You don't want one who goes, well, oh, I don't know if I'm any good, but I'll try.
Marissa, we're out of time. We're going to have you come back for more. If you want to find her on her website, rapidtransformationtherapy.com, on Instagram at Marissa Peer Therapy. And her actual website is marissapeer.com. So you've got all of that. We'll put that up on our website as well, mariamenounos.com.
Hope you enjoyed that interview. Now you're going to hear some key management tips from my friend Daniel Scott. He's the managing director of TripAdvisor's number one rated hotel in Mexico, the Rosewood Mayacoba. And he's going to talk to us about treating your employees with kindness and dignity and how that directly correlates to financial success.
I've always loved going one-on-one with people.
Welcome back to Conversations with Maria Menounos.
Guys, I am joined by the managing director of TripAdvisor's number one rated hotel in all of Mexico for 3 years in a row, the Rosewood Mayacoba. Today, our guest here is to teach us how to plan a great trip, share some amazing leadership tips for employers, and tips for employees on how to make the most of your job. Please welcome Daniel Scott.
Hola. ¿Cómo estamos?
Now you're in my casa.
I know. Me encanta.
I'm normally in your casa, which is exactly how you treat that resort. Like, it is your home.
It is our home.
And, you know, like I said earlier, I don't know if you were listening, but it's literally unbelievable. And I remember what the property was like when you first got there, because we were rerouted from Las Ventanas when the hurricanes hit Cabo. And the travel agent said, you should try this place. It's the same resort company, you know, go to Cancun. And I was like, all right, fine, but it's further away, and I really like Las Ventanas. And then when I got there, I was like, oh. And Daniel just came in, and every year we've gone, it just gets better and better. And I think, you know, it's a testament to your leadership. Everyone there that works there is happy.
They provide the most unbelievably stellar service. The property always, they're like adding new things, whether it's a garden or a taco truck area or whatever it is, they're always improving. And you guys know Kevin has trained you guys well. He always says Kaizen.
Yeah.
You know, continuous improvement. That's what Toyota believes in. And I think, you know, when you see businesses that we won't mention, certain like fast food chains that are just done and tired, and then you see other ones that continuously update and grow, that really is the difference. And so,
but listen,
I think you guys have done such an incredible job, and I want you to teach people how to do what you do. How do you lead a team like that so that they are happy?
Yeah, and I think it's, well, thank you. Thank you. It is a special place. And I think what we do is what you mentioned a little bit. I think we listen. Yeah. I think the day that we think we have it all figured out is the day that we're not special anymore. And I think we listen to our friends who come to visit us in our home. But most importantly, I think we listen to the people I spend every day with. I think everyone, every member of the team understands that they play an integral role into the success and the happiness of our guests, and they really are invested in the happiness of the guests and of the people that they work with. And I think just the constant communication with the team, listening to them, and so that they realize that everyone has a voice. It's a refined culture, which is one of respect, where there's no levels. I mean, everyone has different responsibilities. But then you really, and when you hire people who view service as a privilege, mm-hmm. which is a really important part, because I think it is a lifestyle. And I think the members of the team who I spend my days with, you know, they don't view service as subservient or second class. You know, they really get joy out of seeing others happy. And so, yeah. And I think when you see someone like Diego on the beach, you mm-hmm. know.
It's love Diego.
He's the best.
I miss him.
But it's his home. It's his home. And, you know, I think that he really understands that he plays an equal role to mine within the hotel. And then when everyone is kind of shares that goal and like really enjoys the challenge of being special every day, because mm-hmm. it's not easy. I mean, it's not easy, but you can take the challenge in a negative way or you can take it in a positive way. And as I was saying to Lauren, like our motto is KIP, keep it positive. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how we view each day. I think no place is perfect, but I think
you guys are pretty damn close.
But I think
closest I've ever seen.
But I think what we have also is humility. Mm-hmm. I think that's why, you know, with all the accolades, I think what we do is we have a good conversation. We have great friends who visit us, and we also talk to them and say, hey, what's going great? And what also can we be doing to make your experience more special?
Yeah.
That's kind of the key. But I think for us, it's the hiring process is very important, and kind of attitude is, you know, that positive attitude. And
do they inherently have to have that attitude when they come in to meet with you? Like, do you test them? How do you judge whether someone has the right attitude to be there, or do you have to train them for that attitude?
I think the training process, we got it. But what's important in, we're looking for people outside the hospitality sector, and we're really looking for those who get joy out of making others happy, mm-hmm. whether that's their children, whether that's their spouse, whether it's the people that they work with. If you really, you know, view service as a privilege, you know, when you're kind of in your time off outside of work, your best day is one where you're really taking care of your kids or you're doing something special with your friends, then we'll find something in the hotel. I mean, even like most of our butlers aren't probably qualified per se mm-hmm. in the traditional like luxury hotel, but they love taking care of others, and that gives them happiness. And so all of those other training processes, we can train, but you just have to have that internal positivity and just that really, you know, you have to just, it's not just about taking care of guests. What's more important to us is our internal culture, where you're really trying to set up all your teammates for success. Because mm-hmm. if you're really not just focused like a racehorse, but you're kind of looking around saying, hey, what can I be doing for fellow teammates to be successful? Then that's when you start to develop a very special culture.
Interesting. And I also, like Kevin says, hire for heart, train for skill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the team knows too that, I mean, with all due respect to you and Kevin, my principal responsibility is to take care of the team and their respective families, because while we have very high expectations, it's also a beautiful culture, and that they know that we're going to be taking care of of course, first and foremost them, but also their families. We're going to have great benefits. It's going to be very, you know, positive. I mean, we talked about just a culture of decency where it's like, hey, I speak to you, Maria, in the same way that I speak to Diego. Yeah. There's no levels, and that's just respect. And so I think the team knows that when, you know, you see that positive energy around the hotel, because that's the same energy we have internally, and that kind of transcends to your experience.
So a bad egg is going to show themselves very quickly in there.
Yeah, and it's not me, because, as I mentioned, it's a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And if you're really not committed and you don't, as we said, enjoy that challenge and take that challenge in a positive way each day, then your teammates are going to be like, you know, maybe this isn't for you.
Yeah.
Because you all have to be in together. I mean,
see, but that's the key, the teammates. You're talking about everybody as a team.
Yeah. And sometimes, I think some employers make the mistake that, I mean, my responsibility is to give everyone the tools to be successful and to have a really positive culture. But, you know, sometimes relationships don't work. And it's okay to have that conversation to say, hey, if this isn't for you, if you want just a place just to make money, if you just want to work in the nicest hotel in Mexico, then, you know, then Rosewood Mayacoba is not the place for you, because you really have to be committed and invest in the happiness of guests, but you also have to be looking out and taking care of the people you work with. And I think it's pretty, and so it will be the teammates, as you say. It's like, if you don't want to be a part of this culture, then that's okay, but you just can't be here.
Yeah, it's so interesting. So how do you handle, say, like, Diego screws up. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you talk to Diego if he, say he was having a bad day, like his wife, you know, was pissed at him at home and he brought it to work and he, like, maybe, you know, screwed up our drinks and then didn't want to, this never happens. I can't imagine it even happening, because poor Diego's going to listen and be like, wait, I would never do that. Right. But I'm using him as an example. Just say he has a bad day and he screws up. How do you handle, as a manager, like, in a sense, not reprimanding, but correcting it? And how do you handle it?
I think that, first, you know, our only rule, I mean, besides to have fun within the hotel, is just to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And Diego is completely empowered. Some leaders don't like that word, empowered. And I hear it a lot from other cultures as well. But I'm saying, hey, if you have the right people who have the right attitude, then give them the tools to be successful, and also let them make mistakes. Mm-hmm. That's okay. Nobody's perfect. Or we say in Mexico, nadie es perfecto. Right? But, and I think that in, you know, I think with Diego, whether, I mean, he is a wonderful person, but not perfect. You just have a good conversation with leaders, but it's also one of respect, because Diego knows that we as leaders are invested in his success. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think, and it goes back to the culture where, you know, everyone sure has bad days, but when you enter, there's a positive energy from the time that you talk to the security guard. I think that, you know, our back of, or the heart of the house, is of the same quality as any of our guest spaces. So people feel that pride when they're there. And I think, you know, when we talk about KIP, I think it's also contagious. I think when Diego gets there, and it shifts for him. And I think Diego, what gives him joy besides his family, and Diego does have a beautiful family, what gives him joy in his life is seeing you and Kevin happy.
Yeah.
So this is his home. He's taking care of you. And that's what I think so many cultures and hotels, even in Mexico or here in the States, can learn. You know, you don't have to be in service. You don't have to prefer to serve as opposed to be served. You just have to enjoy both. I mean, and that's what we do. We still go out. We still go to hotels, restaurants, but we also view what we do as a privilege, and to have a small positive effect on the lives of people, like hopefully we have that positive effect on even Kevin when you visit, is really special. I mean, it's not to the degree of doctors or police officers or firemen, but to just make people enjoy their lives a little bit more, and hopefully they go back trying to be a better person in their lives when they get home, and is really rewarding. Really rewarding. I think Diego feels that, and I think that transcends throughout the whole team that I work with.
I love it.
Where did you learn all of this?
Like, where did you learn all of these leadership skills?
I think... my folks, of course, first and foremost. You know, my dad always told us to do, like, he'd always taught me to do common things uncommonly well. And that's kind of most of what all of us do throughout the day. It's, you can view any job in this world as remedial as you would like. Or you can say, hey, I'm going to do this common thing uncommonly well, right?
That's a great quote.
No, I think my parents just taught me respect, and you know, we talked about decency a little bit in the Mac, and it's kind of, I think that's why I've been successful with hotels and why Rosewood Mayakoba has been so successful, because it is just a place of respect where everyone knows that they're going to be respected, their voice is listened to, and it's also, we follow up on it, because you know, it's one thing to talk about something, and it's another thing to actually follow up. And I think with hospitality itself, I've learned that I'm smart enough to know that I don't know much for you. Humility is, I think so many nice hotels or successful businesses be like, you know what, thank you for your feedback, we got it figured out. But no, we don't do that. We just talk to people, we talk to the team, and you know, we make changes. Humility is such an important skill set. And I think when people lose that, or you know, they lose that lack of curiosity, that's when businesses start to have difficulties. And I think all those, in any industry, you know, all those industries are just staying humble and saying, hey, you can be confident, but you're always trying to take it to the next level.
Yeah. Got to keep growing and keep getting better. I keep saying that it's such an impressive property because, you know, you just see everyone being happy. And when I go there, my shoulders drop and I just feel so at peace. And to this day, like since we were there in October, I started this new meditation there. And when I meditate, I'm back on that beach and I hear that water and it's so strong for me because I can really rest and relax there. And I had so many breakthroughs on that trip and all the other trips. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you, like, imagine I come in to interview for a position there. How do you approach that interview?
Well, I think you're going to go through any position, because we talked about, you know, no levels, you're going to meet around 8 to 10 people. I'll of course will meet everyone. I mean, of the 562 who are part of the team. And, you know, I'm looking for attitude first and foremost. It doesn't matter. Experience, sure, in some positions. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going to be like Juan Pablo, the executive chef, it's important that you know how to cook.
Shout out to Juan Pablo.
I mean, Jorge Clooney. But I think throughout the whole interview process with human resources and all the leaders that you'll meet, we're just trying to see if you have that positive attitude, if you really, you know, care about others in your personal life, in your personal life. Because attitude, whether you like it or not, it's pretty apparent. You can only, you can see throughout the experience that the service is genuine, and that sincerity comes through very quickly. And so that's kind of what we're looking for.
So are you kind of putting them in positions to kind of watch them?
Yeah,
and
we
then
do
you're studying them in
we
a
do
sense?
A month contract for a year.
Okay.
Because it's a two-way relationship. Because if it's not for you, then that's okay.
Yeah.
If you don't love this, lifestyle, then it's not good for the hotel, but it's also not respectful for you. Then it's just not the right, you know, work relationship.
Yeah.
And so I think that's important to have an honest conversation. That's what we do. And meanwhile, we're giving the team the tools to be successful in their position. But I think, you know, we'll start in various positions throughout the hotel, but the most important thing is just that positive attitude. And if you view service as a privilege.
Yeah. Because everything from there can be taught.
If you think service is second class, then, you know, then this isn't the right place for you.
And do they have to have like prior experience? No. Does that even matter? It sounds like it didn't.
No,
yeah.
I mean, no. I think, you know, I look at Angelica who works with us. She used to work in pharmacies, but I love her. Like, I mean, she's just got this, you know, her positivity is contagious. And I think people are looking for emotional experiences now. And a big part of that emotional experience is just being a place where there's just positive energy. And, you know, everyone now wants to be the best. It's important to be a better wife, to be a better friend, to be a better leader. You have to also take care of yourself first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to, when you vacation, to be in a place where just there is this positive energy and you're going to kind of take that back with you. And it's also about building kind of emotional experiences as well. So, but I think I think for us as a business, you know, we do it 1 month contracts for a year. And, you know, what we do is we invest in the team. You know, we as we've mentioned, we serve, it's the same facilities in the back of the house that we will show to the guests. Same cuisine. We have a gym for the team. We are the only hotel in Riviera Maya that does a 5-day work week as opposed to a 6-day. And what you see then is, I would say on average, you know, the turnover ratio in probably Riviera Maya is probably like 40%, and ours is 7. So people stay. People stay. I mean, you know, it's, we have high expectations, but it's also a really positive culture as well. And I think that translates is what so many business leaders forget, is it also translates into financial success.
Yeah.
Because when you're taking care of the team, and they have this positive energy that, you know, that's playing an integral part in the experience for guests. You know, guests do, they come back.
Yeah.
They come back because they want to be in a place where people are happy and that people are genuinely interested in taking care of them. So they don't go to different places. They just keep coming back because they view it as their second home.
Yeah.
You know, across the border.
That's
which
how
is
we
awesome.
Feel.
Awesome. It is. It is.
We went from like once a year to like, oh my God, we have to be there twice a year. Yeah, like Kevin last time was like, when are we going back?
Su casa.
But I also love the team building experiences. So when we were there in October, it was El Día de Muerto. Sí. And they have this contest. So you should explain it, actually.
Yeah, each department's responsible. Día de los Muertos is, I mean, it's great that it's more recognized in the U.S. now. It's the most important holiday in Mexico because it's about terms of remembering your family. And it's just really special, very similar to maybe Thanksgiving in terms of just here in the U.S. And so what we invited all the teams, they, you know, they build their own altars in Katrinas. We invite their families to participate as well. And I think what it does is, I mean, the more that we can have family involved in the overall experience, so people can, we can share that and also share that with guests as well to say, hey, we're not, it's just not a work relationship. It's definitely more of a personal relationship. And I think for the team, we are also celebrating where we are. I mean, we're not trying to hide the fact that we're in Riviera Maya. We celebrate Mexico. We celebrate our history of Mexico. We're very proud of it. And I think that's what it's kind of, and the team feels that they want to share their culture. They want to speak Spanish to guests in the hotel to learn un poquito during their stay. And I think it's important for guests where they're, when they're there, they know that they can only enjoy the experience here in Mexico. You cannot like waking up being like, or kind of exploring the property and being like, am I in Miami or in Bali or whatever, you know that it's unique. And that specifically starts to the way that the team shares with you their culture, their family history. And I think that we'll do that throughout the year and more just trying to make sure that we involve the families of the team members inside the hotel experience and kind of sharing our second home with them.
I love that. You should see. It was like the coolest thing. Like the butlers, they every team, like the butlers, the concierge, the guest services, the management teams, the, you know, the beach, you know, crew, like everyone has their team and they're creating this like statue, let's say, and they're so creative. They have to use all
recyclable
materials.
Yeah.
The things they created, and it's like the transportation guys. I'm like, who would have known that they were that artistic?
They're awesome.
They come up with the most unbelievable stuff.
Wow.
All from like, you know, plant leaves or whatever they're finding on the property. And it was just so unbelievable and so cool. And they're so proud and so excited.
Yeah.
And that is part of this, is like that team building. And
it also shows that, I mean, we are looking for intelligence when during the hiring process. And I think what you see in the hotel is that there's this idea when you meet the transportation team or the waiters, you know, this is for them. They're very proud in their positions, but they're also very intelligent. Some might be looking for to grow in different areas of the hotel, but it also shows when you meet the housekeeping team, when you meet the guys on the beach, there's this beautiful intelligence with Mexican hospitality, which is really special.
Best. I always say, like in Mexico, you get the best. Well, there you get the best hospitality, the best food, the best service. Like everything across the board is an A+.
Wow! If you're new to the hotel and I'm coming there for the first time, what is something that you recommend that
get to know
everyone should do?
Well, first I would say get to know the team. Get to know the team as much as possible because they're here to take care of you, and you'll see that it's like it's not a burden. This is what we do, and we enjoy it. Secondly, I would say, you know, we do an experience in the garden. We actually eat there too, not just myself. It's not like a captain's dinner, like various members of the team in this Ceiba garden, but it's refined but also comfortable. And you know, we eat there too to show that we can take care of you but still dine at the same table. And I think it shows that people are yearning for the still that interpersonal communication, yeah. you know, and putting your phone down, having a good conversation. You can disagree about things without being disagreeable. And it's just, and for our overall energy within the hotel, it's really nice where the day after that dinner, instead of like going to the people and being like, hey, get out of my chair, you'll be like, hey, yeah. wasn't that a wonderful time last night?
Yeah.
You know, it makes it much more familiar. Anyway, we don't want it to feel like a luxury hotel. We want it. It's our home.
It's our home. Yeah.
It's the best. I can't wait to go back. Daniel Scott, thank you so much for being here with us. You guys can go to rosewoodhotels.com for more information or on Twitter and Instagram at RW Mayakoba. We'll put that up on mariamenounos.com as well. At Dariel Kristen, we'll put that up on our website as well. And yeah, take these tips, guys.
Super.
And I think you need to run for president. That does it for us, guys. Thank you so much for listening to our free Conversations with Maria Menounos podcast edition. Help us, please, by rating and commenting on iTunes, and be sure to tell a friend. Check us out on SiriusXM Stars Channel 109 weekdays at 1 p.m. Eastern. You can also hear us on demand on the SiriusXM app. Join our Conversations crew if you guys want to join our newsletter with life-changing tips and tricks, lots of great giveaways, and so much more. Please email us at conversationswithmaria@gmail.com. Or you can click the link in my Instagram bio. And follow us at Maria Menounos, at SiriusXM Stars, at Charlotte WWE, at Lauren LaGrasso, at Haley Clover. And remember, guys, be nice people, make good choices, and be present.